So our start point is going to be Song of Songs chapter 4, so you might want to just turn to that. Song of Songs is part of the wisdom literature. Why wisdom? Because we want to live well in God's world. He wants you to live well in his world. And why Song of Songs? We want to see everything that God has for us. We want as much as possible. We're spiritually greedy in the right way. We want everything that he has. So a brief recap. What is the Song of Songs? If you were here last week, it is a series of ancient love poems, about 3,000 years old. Where is it coming from? I think it's coming from Genesis chapter 2, with the creation of the first woman, and the man's response is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. He breaks into poetry. He is overjoyed at seeing his wife. There is physical excitement in a human body. The power of Song of Songs is this: the way it challenges our thinking, religious thinking and non-religious thinking. So from the world, the belief that God is anti-sex. God is not anti-sex. God is anti-immorality. That's what he's anti. He's against the misuse of his marvelous gift, but he's not against the gift. So that challenges unbelieving sort of ideas, but it also challenges some religious thinking as well, that this whole sexual stuff is a bit dirty, it's a bit embarrassing, and it's all a bit tedious as well. And Song of Songs will say, no, this is an important part of a marriage relationship. Yeah, it's not the icing on the cake. It's a part of the ingredients, because God uses that to bond people together in relationship. Last week, I said that there are two levels we're going to look at it, level one and level two. Level one, how do we see Song of Songs? The marriage relationship between this woman, who's effectively a peasant woman, and the king, Solomon, level one. Level two, Christ and his church. For all marriages will have their fulfillment in Jesus and his people. Okay, so we're all involved, whether we're married or not. The aim here is not to embarrass, but it is to inform, it is to correct, it is to encourage. So we're going to look at it under three headings this morning. Love and wisdom. Yeah, love and wisdom. Love and protection. And then the lovers described. The lovers described. And this is probably what the book is most famous for. So if you go to chapter 4, verse 1, here are the words of the man. And he says here in verse 1, how beautiful you are, my darling. Yeah? Oh, how beautiful. Yeah, so here's the words of this man. Here's the words of Solomon. He says, he describes his wife, his bride. You are magnificent. You are beautiful. Continue verse 1. Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending on Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn, coming up from washing. Each has its twin, not one of them is alone. Your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. Okay, so then he begins to compare her body to beautiful things that we find in the creation. Her hair, her teeth, her lips, her breast, her neck, even her temple. Her temple. Okay, so look at, where is it gone? Seems to have disappeared. I'm sure I had it in my Bible. Well, one of the things that it's compared to is pomegranates. Your temples are like pomegranates. You say, what's going on there? It doesn't even look, it's a temple. A temple doesn't look like pomegranates, does it? Well, think of pomegranates. If you cut them in half, What do you see? You see this beautiful red color. Yeah? So Google pomegranates and have a look at them. Study it. Meditate on it for a minute. And what you will see is something that is unusual, something that is colorful, and something that is attractive. Yeah? And so he's basically saying, this is like you. You're unusual, you're colorful, you're attractive. Yeah? So, verse 6, until the day breaks and the shadows flee, I will go to the mountains of myrrh, to the hill of incense. All beautiful you are, my darling. There is no flaw in you. Yeah? You might say, well, actually, there probably is a bit of a flaw in her, because no one's perfect. You know, no one is 100% beautiful, attractive. I mean, look at her. Look at her eyes. No, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, isn't it? It's what you think is beautiful. If the husband thinks the wife is beautiful, she is beautiful. To me, you are beautiful and I am attractive to you. So that is one of, actually I found the verse, there you go, verse 3, your temples behind your veils are like the halves of a pomegranate. Now that is one of four different times either the man or the woman describes the other. The groom, he will describe his wife on three occasions. On one occasion, she will describe him. Okay, so the next chapter, chapter 5, says this. Chapter 5, verse 10. She says, my lover is radiant. Okay, he's like the sun. And ruddy. Outstanding among 10,000. His head is pure as gold. Okay, so the effect of looking at gold. His hair is wavy and black like a raven. Okay, you see a raven, deep black. His eyes are like doves, by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. And so she goes on, describing his lips, his arms, his legs, everything about him. Yeah, and it's very, very visual. Verse 16, this is how she concludes. And this is very important. So verse 16, she concludes this. She says, his mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my lover. This is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. Yeah. Do you see the combination? This is my lover. This is my friend. Looking for a marriage partner, this is the key. Lover and friend. Friend and lover. It's a coming together, really, of the book of Proverbs and Song of Songs. For Proverbs will tell you the person you need to look for needs to be godly and also needs to be a friend. Song of Songs will emphasize the physical. You've got to like it. You have to find something physically attractive in it. Yeah? But there are those pastors, there are still a few up and down the country who basically say, look, the whole church needs to be married off. And don't worry about what a person looks like. They've basically got a Bible in their hand, marry them. You won't find me saying that. Okay? You need to go up north. Okay? There's a guy up north who does it. Actually, he might have retired now. So he probably doesn't do it too much anyway. But the thing is, love is important. The physical is important. The proverb says the character and the friendship is important. Yeah? So a good marriage will be what? It will be a combination of friendship and physical attraction. There has to be. Has to be some kind of physical attraction of some kind. Yeah? And not necessarily what everybody else thinks. It's what you think is attractive. So, some lessons for us from these two descriptions we've just looked at. Level one, level two. Level one for married couples. Do you find your partner beautiful? Do you find your partner beautiful? You married men, married ladies, do you find your partner beautiful? Is there something beautiful to them? Is there an ongoing beauty to them? Do you verbalize that? Yeah, there's a song, isn't it? Have I told you lately that I love you? Some bloke with a croaky voice. Can't remember who it is. But here's the thing. Have you verbalized that? Because the wisdom of Song of Songs says you should be. Yeah? Now some people will say, oh yeah, of course, he knows I love him. Sometimes you have to say it. Sometimes you do have to say it. There's a wisdom to it in the building up of esteem and the building up of love. What you see, you must verbalize. Okay, so that's level one. Level two, Christ in his church. When the Lord looks at you, what does he see? When the Lord Jesus looks at you, his bride, what does he see? He sees a people cleansed, forgiven, and clothed in the righteousness of Christ. And he says, beautiful. My people are beautiful. Yeah, and we say, oh no, Lord, you worry about all the flaws, worry about the people who are falling out and the people who've got a bad temper and can never get themselves together. No, no. God says, his verdict on his church is beautiful. Yeah, absolutely beautiful. And so one of the things we need to do, we need to see one another and ourselves as individuals, not how we see ourselves with all the flaws. We need to begin to see it how God sees us. And he sees great beauty. That's number one. Number two is the beauty of Christ. The beauty of Christ and who he is and what he's done. Yeah, you know what he's done in your life. You know he's forgiven you. You know he's cleansed you. You know he's adopted you. You know he's enlightened you. He's redeemed you. Forgiven everything you've ever done. He's sealed you with his spirit. You know he's done that. Have you verbalized it to him? Have you let him know? Have you let him know how the great things he has done? Yeah, it grows our prayer life, doesn't it? When we're able to do that. And there are passages to help us. Colossians 1, Revelation 1, Philippians 1, Ephesians 1. They will all tell us what God has done for us. Read them, meditate on them, and tell him. Tell him and tell the world. That's how evangelism works. It's an overflow of what I'm telling God. What I'm telling God overflows into what I'm telling the world. Let's tell him. So, that's love described. Now, wisdom and love. If you turn to chapter 8. Chapter 8 and verse 5. Chapter 8, verse 5. I think if you're going to use Song of Songs in evangelism, this is one of the places to go because of what it says about love. And this is from the final poem that we have in the Song of Songs. And it says there in verse 5, the beloved, okay, the lady, the bride, under the apple tree I roused you and your mother conceived you. There she was in labor, who was in labor gave you birth. Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death. Its jealousy unyielding as the grave. It burns like a blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot wash it away. If one were to give all the wealth of his house for love, it would be utterly scorned. Okay? The person would say, no deal. No deal on this. So, here we have love compared to fire, to wealth, and to death. Why? Think about death. Death is consistent. Death is consistent in its pursuit of people. Death does not give up. Death will persevere until it finally catches up with you. And then you're taken down. What we're told here is love is the equal of death in its persistence. That if you love someone or if someone loves you, they will be persistent in that love. Nothing will put it off. Indeed, when you come to the gospel, into the New Testament with Christ dying for his people, you see a love that actually exceeds death. But such is God's love for his son. When his son is killed and is crucified, he will raise him from the dead. He will free him from death. And we're told he will even free those who have died in Christ from death. Such is the power of love. And we're told here, aren't we, in verse 6, where love is denied, or where love is taken from one person and given to another, the jealousy it produces will be frightening. Have you ever met a person who was cheated on, or whose husband or wife left them for someone else, and they wanted to still be with that person? There's no reasoning with that person. There's almost nothing that person won't do, potentially. You've got to watch them carefully. Because if they catch that person who stole their wife, well, certainly where I was brought up, they will give you one right on your chops. They will punch you straight in the mouth, and that's the least of them to you. Yeah? When jealousy comes, boom, it's like a fire. It's like a fire. And then back to verse 7, what are we told? So, you know, it blazes like a mighty, it's like a blazing fire, verse 6, like a mighty flame. Many waters can't quench love. Rivers cannot wash it away. You know, we've seen, haven't we, tragic fires across Europe. And even in London, even in Wembley. Tragic fires that take lives and devastate property. People left with nowhere to live. And the only relief for those people is what? Water. Yeah? Firemen who will try to douse it with water. But what if the fireman comes up to you and says, listen, we've been trying for an hour to keep this fire. I'm sorry, you're going to have to evacuate. We're going to have to go. You say, what about my home? Look, we have to go. We have to go. The fire is won. And that's what we're told love's like. Love is like a fire. Yeah? Now, there's a negativity to that, but there's also a positivity to that. Because if someone positively loves you, they will never stop. They'll not stop loving you. Yeah? And indeed, the love, level 2, Christ and the church, means his love for you is like a fire. Think about that. Can we sing about God loving us? His love for you as someone he has forgiven and cleansed is like a fire. It will never go out. That's how deeply he loves you. May God open our eyes collectively to see how much he loves us. It's like a fire. It's not going out. Yeah? Now, also told, look, it can't be corrupted. So, you know, verse 7, if one were to give all the wealth of his house for love, it would be utterly scorned. Yeah? So if someone were to say, look, it's £10,000, can you stop loving her? You say, no. Say, okay, I'll make it £20,000. No. I'll make it, stop. I'm not giving it up. I love that person and I will continue to love them. Yeah? So what does that tell me? Authentic love is invaluable. You cannot put a price on it. And it is very, very precious. Yeah? So the popular music over decades, people will keep talking about the power of love. There's loads of songs about the power of love, isn't there? Yeah, Celine Dion talks about the power of love. Jennifer Rush talks about the power of love. I'm aging myself. Frankie Goes to Hollywood, the power of love. Dear old Luther Vandross, he's speaking about everyone's speaking about the power of love. And what does Solomon say? Welcome. Welcome, Celine Dion. Welcome, Luther. I've been here for 3,000 years. This is what I've been saying. This stuff, this love is powerful. It's not nothing. The culture will tell you, it's no big deal. Give it to whoever you want it. Give it to. He says, no, no, no. This is powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. So if it's powerful, what should we do? Well, the bride has two words. She has one to her girlfriends and one to the groom. To her girlfriend, she says in 8 verse 4, daughters of Jerusalem, I charge you, do not arouse or awaken love until it slowly dies. Okay, that's from last week, wasn't it? But it's consistent throughout the book. Don't just give yourself to the first person you see and the person who just tells you how beautiful and marvelous you are. Hold back. Hold back with your emotions. Don't give them straight away. Yeah? Your will can stop you from making mistakes. Yeah? You don't have to just say, oh, I've fallen in love. There's nothing I can do about it. Yes, you can do something about it. Okay? If you give... Yeah. Anyway, I won't go about too much on that one. The groom, verse 6. What's the word to him? Place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death. Okay, so the seal is the ownership to say that he belongs to her and she belongs to him. Seal on the arm, it's seen by the world. Seal on the heart, there's a real deep commitment. Okay, so it wasn't, oh, my parents forced me into marrying this woman, and here I am, I'm stuck with her, oh dear, and it's awful. No, that's not a seal on the heart. Seal on the heart is, I want to do it. And so she says, you've got to want to do it, but you've got to be public, not ashamed of it either. Seal on the arm, seal in the heart. Yeah? And don't awaken love until it's ready. Okay, one final question and then one observation. Final question is about this power of love and its effect on the young. What do we do with our children? What do we do with family and this power of love? So this comes from, depending on who this is, it's either the girlfriends or it's a group of brothers, depending on the Bible version and how they sort of break it down. But chapter 8, verse 8, we have a young sister, her breasts are not grown. What should we do for our sister? For the day she is spoken for. If she's a wall, we will build towers of silver on her. Okay, so we're going to build on what's already there. If she's a door, okay, she hasn't built anything, we will enclose her with panels of cedar. So how can we protect our children? How can we protect our family, especially the young, from making the wrong moves with regards to love? Well, there's the wall and there's the door. The door and the wall. The wall, you have to climb over. The door, you walk straight through. It's easier if it's a door, isn't it? So the door to the heart, is it a wall or is it a door? Can anyone just come in, or is there some measure of protection? And they're basically saying, depending on who this youngster is, if she's too naive or she's too stubborn and says, oh, I don't care, I want love, then we're going to build a wall. Okay, because she's a door. But if she's a person who says, I can't hear what you're saying, that's cool, we can build on that. So here's the answer. And the answer's quite involved, actually, but it's worth hearing. The answer from the beloved is, I'm a wall. Yeah? And my breasts are like towers. Thus, I've become in his eyes like one bringing contentment. Okay? So in a dramatic and poetic way, she says, I was a girl. Now I'm a woman. Yeah? Physically, I'm a woman. Listen to me. And then she goes into this story about a business deal. Solomon and a business deal. And she says, she starts to talk about vineyards and the purchase of vineyards. What we need to know is this. His vineyards are literal vineyards. Her vineyard is symbolic. It's a figure of speech. It's a description of her love and her body. Okay, so we ready? Already? Let's go. Verse 11. Solomon had a vineyard in Baal Hamon. He let out his vineyard to tenants. Each was to bring for its fruit 1,000 shekels of silver. But my own vineyard is mine to give. The 1,000 shekels are for you, O Solomon, and the 200 are for those who tend its fruit. Okay, say, what is going on here? Now, let me try and explain. If you were to take a bus from the top of this road, 52 bus, and you were to go down to, is it Victoria? Yeah? You will pass through Notting Hill Gate. Yeah? Going up to Notting Hill Gate. And you will see around Notting Hill Gate some magnificent apartments, usually white painted, about four stories high. And what you will see behind there, and it's, you've got to be on the upper deck, actually, to see this. You will see, like, gardens. Okay? Gardens. They belong to the residents. So it's communal gardens. And once I was walking up there, when I was a teenager, I walked up there, and I actually found a guy to go to school with. And he goes, Andrew, what's happening? And I started talking. And then he started talking about the gardens. And he said, yeah, they're not for everyone, but here's a key. Let's go and have a look. So I went into this garden. It was magnificent. Absolutely. It was like a little park. But you'll never see it. Because it's not open to everybody. It's only the residents. Okay, I know there's some sort of scheme whereby a lot of residents are letting people for one day a year, one or two days a year, weekend, we'll let the public, the sort of riffraff, come and have a look. But actually, it's just for them. Solomon's cut a deal on the vineyards. He's rented it out for money. And what she is saying is, my own vineyard cannot be bought. Yeah, I'm not just giving this, I'm not giving my body to anybody. It's not to be rented out, and no money is going to make a difference. So what is she saying? Basically this, protecting your family, yeah, from sort of predators, if you like, from wrong relationships, is a good thing. Okay, that was brought home to me again when I was a teenager, when I was at school. And there was a guy who just allowed his sister to be passed around to three, four, five guys. And I think back to that and think that was terrible, that was horrible, and that was wicked. He did not do his duty to his family and to his sister. So protection is a good thing. But here's the thing. It's only going to take you so far. It's only going to take you so far. At some point, the person must be willing to protect themselves. And as she says, you've got to build your own wall. You can only go around chasing people down and checking up on them for so long. They have to build a wall themselves. And when will a person build a wall? When they see the value of a sexual gift that God has given. When they see the destructive nature of love. And when they see God's value for them. That before God, you're a fire. He's like a fire to you. And he has an intense love for you. So, it's an introduction, okay? It's not the last words. It's probably the most difficult book I've ever looked at, actually. But when it comes to love, when it comes to marriage, when it comes to men, when it comes to women, when it comes to embarrassment, when it comes to shame, when it comes to wisdom, when it comes to evangelism, when it comes to love, this book has much to teach us. Has some great things to teach us about love. As we finish, let me read those verses again, because it speaks of our love for one another in a marriage context, but also Christ's love for you. Verse 6, place me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm, for love is as strong as death. Its jealousy unyielding as the grave. It burns like a blazing fire. Okay, his love for you is like a blazing fire, like a mighty flame. Many waters cannot quench love. Rivers cannot wash it away. If one were to give all the wealth of his house for love, be utterly scorned, be turned down. May God continue to teach us and change our thinking through